Coming to you from Whidbey Island, Washington, this is Stories from Women Who Walk. True life, practical, funny, heartbreaking, insightful human experience stories from women who are walking their lives while their lives walk them, and the lasting difference these journeys have made. You'll recognize yourself in stories of adversity, challenge, fear, discovery, adventure, expression, and more. Why? Because the sorcery of stories is this. They help each of us to be seen and heard, to understand and be understood. I'm your host, Diane Wisga. Today, my guest is artist Ruth Dent, who is joining us from Bergerac in southwest France. I met Ruth a few months ago on LinkedIn after stumbling on her mesmerizing abstract paintings. How does she do it? Ruth mixes colors with emotions to help you celebrate life, nature, humanity, and the spirit in darkness as well as light. Welcome to the podcast, Ruth.
Hello, Diane. Thank you so much for that amazing introduction. I'm really thrilled to be here.
I'm just delighted. It was such a pleasure to stumble on you, which is what I did, and then go to your website and see the work you do and hear a little bit more about your story. And I was so engaged. I believed that my listeners would really want to share that story with you as well.
Thank you.
Good. So it's been 10 years since you finished your printmaking degree. And I believe our listeners would like to know a bit more about that as context or backstory. So what it is, and how did you know this was the road you were to follow back then?
Okay, well, I took a foundation degree before I, foundation course before I took my degree. And I had one of those aha moments that we do occasionally in the printmaking studio. And then after that, that was it. I was headed for the printmaking degree and I wanted to learn the technicalities of it and explore the alchemy. Actually, that's what I love about it, is the alchemy. And actually, when I'm painting, it's the alchemy of mixing the colors and choosing the colors, and sometimes the colors choosing themselves. So back then, when I finished my degree, I was working on what I would describe as interpretive projects. So for instance, I interpreted choral evensong into a series of 16 images, taking the service, which was the combination of compline and vespers, which was created into evensong, and then taking it and all the history, the music, and sort of condensing that into a visual journey, because it's all words, it's words, it's black on white, it's music is black dots on white background. And so I deliberately didn't use any black in the images at all. And I came to create that because at that time, my son was a chorister at Rochester Cathedral. So that's how that came to pass. And then following a couple of years later, I exhibited those works in Rochester Cathedral as huge 2.5 meter banners. So they started off as prints that were 50 centimeters by 25. And then I transferred them and painted the banners, which were 2.5 meters by 1.35 meters. And they went to Rochester, and then they also went across to the Isle of Man, and then finally to Worcester and Bradford cathedrals. So that was really nice, taking them around and experiencing them in different places. I also interpreted Virginia Woolf's first novel, The Voyage Out, and Benjamin Britten's War Requiem. And I interpreted that into a series of prints that were screen prints, all of it finished with a lino cut. And I think one of them had a mono print in there. I like using multiple layers. And that's They were the most recent interpretive projects.
So I don't forget to ask this. Is that work on your website if someone wanted to take a look at it?
Yes, actually the one that isn't at the moment is the other Voyage Out paintings. But one of them in, actually the most important one is there, because 5 years ago, my work changed. Back in 2015, it was the centenary of the publication of Virginia Woolf's first novel. And I challenged myself to create an image that held the spirit of the novel. So I started a couple of paintings, and one of them, I got so far and I didn't know what to do next. And if I don't know what to do, I do nothing. So I had this painting on the floor. I had a studio in Rochester at the time. So I sat, I had a desk next to it, and I'd look at this painting and think, oh, what on earth am I going to do with this? So it sat there and it sat there for about 6 weeks. And then eventually one day I just looked at it and thought, oh, I need to pour some paint over it. Just as you do, you just sort of think. So I did. I poured some paint over it. And the effect, it gave like an aqueduct effect, which I really liked. So I worked in it some more, put some more layers on it. And the final layer was, it ended up as red broken grids. And I was absolutely captivated by these broken grids. And I looked at those and thought, gosh, I've got to do something with these. And then somehow there was this sort of coming together of those grids. And then on the school run, I started seeing grids in nature. So in the hedges, in the trees that were overhanging the road. And when I was going out for walks, I was seeing these broken grids. And the fact that they were broken as well, so they weren't a prison, it was like breaking out, but at the same time, they provided like a veil. So, and they provide like a window through to sort of look beyond. So I spent sort of the next 3 years walking in the woods, walking around and getting lots of inspiration and creating these big series of work. And it sort of changed. I was working oil on canvas. I worked acrylic on paper. I actually even worked with some linen thread and created like a grid and then painted that as well. So I sort of explored it in all sorts of different ways. And in the end, pathways appeared as well. And one day when I was in the studio, I was working on a particular painting and I was almost transported back to an earlier trip to India. And I was stood there painting. I could feel the heat and I could smell. I was literally there.
Let's take this wonderful body of work and begin to break it down. So you have given us a journey of at least 5 years, a journey of yourself and a journey of your work. When we talked, You said that these past 5 years, you began following your own path, which is a very bold statement. Where did that come from and how did it show up?
Well, it literally showed up at the point when the broken grids appeared, because I sort of stepped away. I'd taken other people's creations and interpreted it into a painting or a print or a series of paintings and prints. So actually one of the most fundamental things was, so, and I use music and all sorts of things. So the titles were already there. So this was a sort of transformation, because I then had to title my own work, which was something new. So I wasn't working to a title. I was just creating something and I would work on it until it was finished. and then I would give it a title. And so that was a big change back then. I mean, now I'm doing it all the time, but back then it was quite a big change.
Well, that's an enormous transformation. I imagine many women listening, or all of our listeners, can recognize that the moment you step off the path that you've been on and you carve out your own path, you begin your own walk, it is wide open. And so it doesn't have a lot of the same security direction it did before. Now, as you say, you've got this open way to express yourself. And it's very bold, and it's very expressive art that you produce. So I'm curious to know how this choice about following your own path has further informed the art that you're now producing, which is different than what you did before.
Oh, yes, it's actually constantly evolving. I think it's the broken grids became Visible, Invisible Veil, that series of work, which, as I say, lasted for about 3 years. And as I say, there's a lot of experimentation in there. I enjoyed all of it. I just enjoyed all of it. And so, some of them, there's this particular painting called Turning Green. And once, I can't remember when it was, but it was a spring. And again, driving on the school run, we were passing this particular tree every day, twice a day, every day. And I literally saw it unfurl in front of my eyes. And then I went and thought, wow, I've got to capture that. So I went to the studio and captured that. Sometimes it's there isn't that sort of direct link. You start, you've got a blank piece of paper, you've got some sort of idea, you pick up a colour, you make a mark, and then you allow the painting to develop from there, very much feeling. And because I work sort of wet and then set up, almost setting up like an experiment, and so you can only work on it for so long because otherwise it's going to end up as a complete mess. And so I would often work and then leave the studio, and then I'd sort of bowl up the next morning and would always be surprised at what had happened overnight. And sometimes the paint had pooled and it would take 2 or 3 days to dry. So it was it was quite amazing. And then really during that time, so that informed me for so long, but sort of during that time I was reading and thinking and obviously going to see other art, doing a lot of walking in the woods as well, so that is always inspirational. But a particular book I read was Robert Graves' The White Goddess, which absolutely captivated me. And then what actually ended up happening was I had this idea to create a large painting that would envelop the spectator. So I got a big piece of canvas, so it was over 3 meters wide and 1.40 meters high, and I nailed it to the wall. And I started painting this, and I was using pipettes at the time to paint, not brushes, pipettes.
You're referring to those little glass tubes that you might see in a chemistry lab or something.
Yeah, okay. That's what I'd been using for the last 3 years. And so I continued to use these, but and then it was building up sort of vertical, near vertical, possibly vertical lines. And so I had this big painting, and at some stage, and I really can't really remember exactly how it happened, but basically from this one painting, the whole thing morphed into a complete installation. So I ended up with six of these huge canvases, which took you around the colour wheel. And actually, the other thing I'd done was I'd visited Chartres with a friend, and then we'd gone back because between, I think it's between Easter and All Saints, you can walk the labyrinth on a Friday. Every other day it's covered, but on a Friday they remove the chair so you can walk it. And that had a big effect on me as well. So that came in. And so I had three canvases inside the circle. I built structures for them. And then I decided that I needed canvases on the other side because I didn't want people, I wanted the whole thing to be contained. But at the same time, there's free movement throughout. And the way the structures, the three structures are situated, they're sort of situated in a circle. But I got the idea for that from a Celtic knot that I saw the bishop's throne up in Hexham several years previously, the sort of thing I remember. I see something, take a photo of it and remember it, and it might come back later to be relevant. So this all came together, and then the particular, what I took out of the White Goddess was I then created five paintings, one for each of the vowels, which then stand at the key points of the year. So you've got A for New Year's Day, you've got O for the spring equinox, U for the summer solstice, E for the autumn equinox, and I for the winter solstice. And then I put drapes all around. So I effectively brought the forest into the gallery. And I was asking the question, did cathedrals, temples, stupas, and labyrinths originate in the forest? And then the final component was I collaborated with my son and we created a sonic landscape to go into the space as well.
So I can only imagine, because I haven't been present for some of these works, that the emotional response evoked by those who are experiencing your work, who are up close and personal with it, who are walking the labyrinthian idea of your White Goddess work, is that emotional response intended? Is it directed? Or do you just put it out there and what happens, happens?
Actually, I put it out there and whatever happens, happens, because it's the spectator who closes the circle always. The spectator who comes in with everything, all that they are, all that they've seen, all that they've experienced. And if it talks to them, that's amazing. Equally, if it doesn't do anything for them, there's nothing I can do and nothing I would even attempt to do. What I would say is that the most amazing response I had to that piece of work was I exhibited it twice and it was lovely both times, but this amazing response came when I was here in France. And a young man came in. There was only me in the gallery, and I was busy. I was sat away from the main part of the installation, and he lay down in the middle of it. And I just made myself completely scarce because that was the most amazing thing ever. And he actually worked in a restaurant a couple of doors down. So later, a couple of days later, he came back in again And I had the opportunity to have a chat with him, and I just said, thank you, because that was just incredible. And a lot of other people, you know, they came in and they really, people fell into two camps. They either got it or they didn't. And that's just the way it is.
That's the way it is with most things.
Yes, exactly.
They either get it or they don't. And if we're lucky, we're present when someone does get it, such as the young man. I have to imagine the answer to your question about labyrinths being created in forests back in the Celtic days or earlier would be yes.
Yes.
I mean, that's just the image that comes up for me is I imagine the view of this young man lying down. That would be something we would do if we were in a forest walking that labyrinthian pathway among the trees. I guess it's true then that you never know what will happen inside the precious space that is your studio, and more importantly, the precious space that's inside your imagination.
No, you don't. You go in, and the most important thing is just to start work. Do something, even if it's just cleaning brushes, tidying up sometimes, and you tidy up and you'll pick up a pot of paint. I have a very good collection of jam jars, and sometimes I think, I could use this, or let's have a go, because you've always got something in mind, but you might not. Sometimes, I mean, quite often I go in there with a specific intention of creating a piece of work, and I've chosen whether I'm going to work on canvas or paper or what. But other times you can just go in there, especially if you're between projects or you're experimenting and you're, well, it's always an experiment. Everything is an experiment. You never know whether it's going to work or not. So yes, you and that's where it's a weird, really strange thing, but if it's going really well, then time stands still. And at the same time, when you step out of the studio, quite easily 2, 3 or more hours can have gone, and you sort of think, gosh, where did that time go?
I suppose that's part of the being in the zone, playing, honoring your true self, giving expression to whatever we came here to do. When we were little bits of, you know, cosmic stardust, and then we end up here on planet Earth with an assignment. You know, we may not remember where we got the assignment from or who whispered it in our ear, but if we're quiet, we'll go, oh, okay, here's my assignment. You know, I'm supposed to express nature on paper or canvas or on the floor. And people will resonate with that in your work, when I'm engaged in your work. And that's the only way that I can put it, because it's not a matter of just looking at it. It becomes an engagement. It draws you in. And I'm just working off of a website. There's a trifecta of themes that I'm seeing. There's Mother Nature. There's climate, what I call climate chaos. Other people might call it climate change. And then this sharing of beauty and joy that you experience in nature. Could you tell us a little bit more about how these themes intersect in your work, how they spark your imagination? Here we are at the end of the road, but not the journey. Thank you for listening to this episode of Stories from Women Who Walk with your host, Diane Wisga, and my guest, boldly abstract artist, Ruth Dent. We'll pick up with part two next Thursday to hear more about Ruth and her work, the themes of Mother Nature, climate chaos, sharing beauty and joy in nature, and much more. Meanwhile, please stop by every Monday through Friday for 60 Seconds, Time Out Tuesday, Story Prompt Friday, and every Thursday for longer guest interviews and Diane on Mic episodes. You'll find us on Simplecast or your favorite podcast platform. Come for the stories, stay for the magic. And speaking of magic, would you leave us a nice rating and review on Apple Podcasts? When you return, bring your friends and relies. You will have wonderful company as we walk our lives together.